funny. Whenever these teams meet, it seems quite often that, you know, the game plan, best intentions, all that good stuff, it goes out the window, and it becomes a really fascinating and quite often at times fun hockey game to watch, because every now and then these two teams like to open it up a little bit, don't they?
Oh, you're reading my mind. I think everybody likes it except the coaches.
Well, yeah, the coaches would hate it. This is not a coaches game.
No, it's not. And you know the rhetoric that we're going to hear this morning from both coaches. We don't want to get in the track meet with these guys. They can score goals. They're dangerous, blah, blah, blah. But you know as well as I do, in the first 2 minutes, they'll probably be nice and tight and feel each other out. And then something always happens when the Pens and the Leafs get together where it's almost like somebody throws a grenade in the room and everybody just starts scrambling everywhere. Both teams seem to get exposed with some defensive deficiencies, and it does end up being a track meet. It's entertaining. It's fun to call as a broadcaster, to watch as a fan, maybe even fun to play as a player when those barn doors get swung open and the ponies start running. It does make for fun hockey, but I'm sure the coaches are grinding their teeth while it's happening.
Phil Bork joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. This team really doesn't seem to have missed a beat under their new coach, under Mike Johnson. What is that, just simply Sidney, Evgeny, everybody's bought into it, and it's basically been a matter of away we go?
That's a big part of it. You obviously need your star players to lead by example and to support the coach in the locker room. But for the most part, there have been some tweaks to the system. And for me, it starts on the defensive side of the puck. And for the Penguins, that's when they played their best hockey. And they've had a couple stinkers, let's be honest about it. But they've had some games where you're just like, holy moly, how are we going to even get to the playoffs playing like this? And then they rebound. So that shows me that the leadership is there and that they are buying into what Mike Johnson is selling, that they've been able to bounce back after some. Just example, we had two games that were not great against the New York Islanders. They go into Boston, and they play one heck of a hockey game against the Boston Bruins and yank 2 points. So I think there's still a learning curve. There still has to be a consistency. They still have some holes to fill, whether it's a top six winger to play with Sid and Gino, to get more scoring from their third or fourth line, to make sure Simon Dupre, if he's your number six defenseman, to be more consistent in his play. So they're not quite there yet. You look at the standings and you think, wow, Pittsburgh just rolling through the Eastern Conference. Not so much. We still have a lot of work to do here.
Phil, Pascal Dupuis' health situation, obviously he's an important guy for this team. Just reading some of the comments after that news conference, he's clearly an important guy in the dressing room as well as on the ice. What does Mike Johnson have to do now? Because he's played, and I didn't see the game, but I'm reading, he's had Nick Spaulding and Patrick Hornqvist on a line with Sidney in practice as well. Right, and they played against the Bruins. I think that was kind of the line that he used. Where does he go? What line combinations do we expect to see him use?
Probably that. He doesn't have a whole lot to choose from. I mean, let's be honest. And he's fallen in love with Bo Bennett, Brandon Sutter, and Steve Downey. And now Bo Bennett probably hurt again as he got mixed up with Mike Miller last game. And this guy just cannot stay healthy. He's an important part of the Penguins' end game, because he is so skilled. But with him out, it looks like they're going to shuffle the deck again. Jason Megna, who's been called up from the Baby Penguins, will be plugged in. In the meantime, you kind of feel for guys like Nick Spaulding and guys like Blake Como that are playing with Sid and playing with Gino. They're almost in a position to fail, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That's not taking anything away from them. I love both those players, but I think they're more suited for a third-line role. And Sid and Gino, who can be a little demanding from their wingers, when things aren't going swimmingly, you can see their frustration. They have a tough time hiding it in their body language. In the meantime, guys like Spaulding and guys like Hornqvist and guys like, Blake Como and Chris Kunitz, they're doing the best they can. These are guys that have to work their butts off to make things happen offensively. It doesn't come natural to them, maybe like it does with a Crosby and Malkin, but the Blackhawks are eventually going to be a team like this too. When you start paying two players and even three players, if you throw in Duncan Keith, ridiculous amounts of money and eating up most of your salary cap, it's going to be tough filling them in with players like Kane and players, like Hossa. Eventually, the Blackhawks are going to feel what we're kind of going through right now, that it's tough to get top six wingers because they demand $4, $5, $6 million,
mm-hmm.
and it's tough to balance out your roster when you have a cap to worry about.
So we just got a few minutes left. Wanted to ask you about Marc-Andre Fleury. Got his 300th career win Monday night in Boston. He signed a four-year, $23 million extension last month. A lot of people kind of looked at that and kind of raised their eyebrows a little bit. Looks to me now like he might be playing some of the best hockey in the past couple of years. What's made the difference for him?
Maturity, mentally stronger, fundamentally sounder, that he doesn't make those circus-like saves. He can make them still, but he doesn't make them as often. A lot of times he was making them because he was so out of position and scrambling to get back, and his athletic ability took over. He really wanted to get that number 300 before Friday night, Friday, I should say, because he turns 30 on Friday. He wanted to get it before his 30th birthday, the youngest, third youngest ever, third quickest to 300. It means a lot to him. He'll downplay it like most players do mid-season when they hit a milestone, but making under $6 million, I know that sounds like a lot of money to most folks. It does to me. But in the realm of NHL players, he's a bargain. He's a steal. He's one of the top goalies in the league.